Jy luister na RSG Geldsaake met Moneyweb Potgoede met gasheer Ryk van die Kerk.
Die Openbare Beleggingskoöperasie of die OBK is die grootste batebestuurder op die vasteland en dit bestuur die bates, die pensioenbates namens die regeringse pensioenfonds, die werkloosheidsversekeringsfonds en ook die vergoedingskommissaris. Die OBK het vandag sy jaarverslag vir sy 2024 boekjaar bekend gemaak en dit wys dat die totale bates wat dit bestuur in hierdie jaar met 3,6% of 95 miljard rand tot 2,7 triljoen rand gestyg het. As 'n maatskappy het die OBK 'n wins van 270 miljoen rand verdien. Dit was 22% hoër as in die vorige boekjaar en daarvan het die OBK 'n dividend van 141 miljoen rand aan die regering verklaar, want die OBK is natuurlik 'n staatsbeheerde instelling. Abel Sithole is op die lyn, hy is die uitvoerende hoof van die OBK. Abel, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a good growth period for the PIC, both when you look at asset under management as well as the profitability of the company. So everything seems to be going well at the PIC.
Very much so. Things are going the way we want them to go. But of course, you will remember we come from a difficult period of time. But yeah, we can talk about that some other time. The answer to your question, yes.
We're going to come back to the previous period because there has been some developments there. But I just want to quickly start with the grey listing. You made several comments regarding the impact the grey listing had on the PIC and its ability to do transactions or invest outside of South Africa. And that is a problem many asset managers in South Africa have faced over the past few years since we've been on that grey list. Can you maybe just give us your account of exactly how the grey listing has made your life more difficult?
At a broader level, of course, it's more compliance to focus on those areas that were identified leading to the grey listing. And then from a direct PIC perspective, yes, it's compliance, but it's also certain specific issues that we need to focus on. For instance, there's a bigger requirement for us to look at politically exposed persons and to do much more focused assessment of those individuals, and also to largely be very mindful of where the funding that we provide goes to and where the money that comes back to cover the money that we've funded comes from as well, so that we do not become a conduit for illicit flows of funds. So that's the one instance. And then, of course, there is the other specific one to the PIC, where there is much more scrutiny from the regulators, especially the Prudential Authority, which considers us to be a SIFI, a significant important institution. And this relates specifically to our investments to financial institutions, especially banks, where we are now limited in terms of how much we can invest in banks. And if we will need to go beyond that, we need to get special permission from the Prudential Authority. And to the extent that we can't, and for instance, the banks are performing, it means then we structurally underperform simply because we cannot be exposed to those institutions due to the now more stringent requirements that are being placed on us.
I wasn't aware of that regulation, because the PIC is the biggest asset manager or holding assets in listed companies in South Africa. And due to the size of the funds you manage, you are actually a significant shareholder in most of the investable companies on the JSE. What is the limitation of the PIC to invest in banks?
It varies, except for special situations where, for instance, in the case of African Bank, we got 25% due to the nature of how the African Bank was rescued and we participated in that. It hovers around 17%. And if you go beyond that, we do need to get special dispensation. It applies to the PIC. I don't think it applies to necessarily other asset managers. It is something that we're working through together with the Prudential Authority and the client, the GEPF, to the extent that we might actually need to just revise our benchmark to accommodate that. But you are right. We are a significant investor, and that's the point that we make to the Prudential Authority. So please, next time when you meet with them, you can express the same view, because we share that view much strongly.
Is there a maximum amount or a maximum stake you can take in one of the big banks in South Africa?
Right now, it is. It is not a number that is unique. So they don't apply a blanket number to all the banks. So for each case, we must actually make an application if we go beyond a certain percentage. And that percentage currently is about 15%. So to the extent that we go above 15% to any bank, we need to write to the Prudential Authority to ask for permission to go beyond that. And currently, it's on average our highest exposure is sitting at about 17%. But as I say, we do have the ability to approach the prudential authority if we need to increase. But there is a limitation. I think currently they probably would be uncomfortable with us taking more than 25% of any bank. That's what I would think.
I think it's probably part of a broader question as well. Due to the size of the PIC, as I've said, you take significant stakes in many companies listed on the JSE. But the JSE is shrinking. We're seeing a lot of delistings. Is the JSE becoming too small for the PIC? Do you foresee any potential structural investment problems stemming from a decline in the number of listed entities on the JSE and the money you will have to invest according to your mandate?
The one that's easier to answer is the first one, because the second one, it can be politically difficult, but I'll answer both. So let's start with the easy one. I think the JSE is definitely becoming too small for the PIC as an asset manager. So I think diversifying away from the JSE would be a preferred option. Or the other option is to, of course, to make sure that the JSE grows big as it to what it was before, because this statement is not a statement about the JSE. It's about the size of the market that I think we're investing in. And to the extent that the market is bigger, we will, of course, want to participate in a bigger market. So that is definitely clear. So some form of diversification is quite important. And that's why investing in the unlisted environment is also quite an attractive area of investment for two reasons: that it diversifies your returns, but it also helps you to invest directly into opportunities to get both a financial and a social return. So I think the answer is yes. And then, of course, the second one is that the JSE is not a problem, but it's the market. As the market shrinks and there are fewer companies that are listed, it really becomes quite difficult for asset manager for ourselves to actually invest without exposing ourselves to undue risk by having to maybe invest in entities that maybe you don't want to, but you're participating in simply because the market is offering what it's offering you.
The PIC can only invest 15% of its assets outside of South Africa, which is a lot less than the 45% private asset managers can invest. Do you think that 15% needs to be revised?
It's actually 15 plus 5. So remember, there's a specific allocation for investing on the continent. So there's a 5% over and above the 15. So it's about 20% if you include the 5% that we can invest in the rest of the continent. I know this is a very difficult question, and the answer will be difficult too, in a sense that I think the private pension funds have been given the opportunity to invest 45% offshore. Empirically, you'll probably struggle to explain why another pension fund like the GEPF shouldn't. And I'm talking empirical, not any other reason. So the answer to saying, would it be attractive to diversify the GEPF into other markets other than South Africa? The answer is yes, I think it will be, unless, of course, the market is growing. And I must maybe put this caveat to say that I'm not saying this ignoring or being oblivious of the fact that the GEPF and the PIC have benefited significantly historically from heavy domestic exposure. But it does mean that over time, the over-reliance on the bias to the South African market can pose significant challenges for both the GEPF, the client of the PIC, and the PIC itself. So yes, I think a higher exposure to investing outside of South Africa and the continent will definitely be desirable for both the PIC and the client.
There has been a big debate over many years about prescribed assets, and that is where the government forces pension funds like the PIC or asset managers like the PIC to invest in government projects. But it seems to have been put to bed, and the President and the Treasury has in many cases stated publicly that they don't believe it's the right way to go. But recently, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, the Minister of Health, said that the PIC would be approached to fund the construction of new public hospitals as part of the NHI. What is your perception currently of the government's position on prescribed assets?
So there are two questions that I think you've asked. The one is prescribed asset, the other one is the funding of NHI. And I must address them differently because they are different answers possibly. So the first thing is the PIC in its current mandates is a significant investor in private healthcare facilities, hospitals, especially also transformative type kind of investments in that sector of health. So we do invest in a number of private hospitals with significant number of beds. That has nothing to do with NHI. It is simply because we believe it's an area that we need to be investing in as part of our transformative mandate and, of course, to get returns for our clients. So we are investing in healthcare. So to the extent that it aligns to our normal investments in healthcare, we will, of course, look at that. as an investment proposal. But to answer the question, have we been requested, approached to fund NHI? The answer is no, we have not been approached to consider funding NHI. And I presume even if it were to happen, it will have to be in line with the mandates that our clients have given us. And we will then invest based on proposals that are being presented in terms of viable projects that we can fund in that regard. So in terms of NHI, there's been no approach for us to considering funding NHI. But should people approach us, and can people approach us? Of course, we can't say to people, you can't or you can. We will look at proposals that are presented and consider what we do based on those proposals. So that's, I think, is the response on the NHI side. On the prescribed asset side, as you say, it is a matter that seems to be put to bed and then once in a while it rises. My sense is that South Africa, and I'm going to speak about South Africa because we forget that, yes, we in a new dispensation, but there are certain empirical lessons that apply whether you talk about this era or a different era. The empirical reasons will remain to say that prescribed assets in South Africa were practiced. And by the way, South Africa was not unique because, again, that's the other mistake we make. We talk as if prescribed assets only apply to South Africa. There are other countries that participated in prescribed assets successfully and otherwise, and one has to look at each one of them to assess why it succeeded in some places and not in others. But historically and across the board, even in areas where one can say there was a measure of success, it is an empirical fact that returns were constrained by prescribed assets. Anybody will find it very hard to provide an argument cogently that will show that prescribed assets provided a significant higher returns. They won't. I think there are other areas where the social returns out of prescribed assets, I think, were better. We can give examples of where that was done. But then you have to look at a lot of other issues like the governance regime, the economic regime, the natural endowment, the human capital endowment to explain why it succeeded in those regions and not in others. And there are other areas where it failed dismally, including South Africa. And here there is historical work which was done before the previous prescribed assets were actually scrapped. And when you go back to study that and understand why, it was largely because it had actually served investors very badly. I think there was a humongous difference in terms of the potential returns that could have been made vis-a-vis the returns that were actually made because of investing in prescribed assets. And that's why prescribed assets were actually abolished. So if we now go back to prescribed assets, we would actually be going back to something that we know doesn't work.
Dankie Abel. Dit was Abel Setole, die uitvoerende hoof van die Openbare Beleggingskoöperasie.
Jy het geluister na RSG Geldsaake met Moneyweb Potgoede elke weeksdag om 7 na middag. Vir meer Moneyweb Potgoede, besoek moneyweb.co.za of laai die toepassing af en volg Moneyweb News om dagliks op hoogte te bly.